any document that goes out of any institution. And the department constantly fails in doing this. And that is totally unacceptable. It's totally, totally unacceptable. We want, as the portfolio committee, to ensure that the department quality checks documents. When your documents come to the portfolio committee, they must have been quality checked, because as soon as they land here, they become public documents. And I don't think you want the public to come to a conclusion that the department, the people who work in the department, shouldn't be there in the first place. And I think also, department, when you give us the progress, you must align it with your plan. Don't report on the night to report staff. Don't do that. When you are reporting, tell us that this was the plan, we achieved one, we did not achieve B. Don't keep this item because we have not done something. You don't report on it. We want you to report according to the plan that you submitted to us. And it's a pity, in the last meeting, I went out and when I came back, you had already moved from the from that item of the department, because I had a lot of questions that I wanted to. You were lucky that I had to go out for some time, and when I came back, the chair had already moved on. I think it's important for you to do this because we are here to oversee. We give you money according to the plan that you have given to us. And we want to see item by item. If you said in quarter one, there's going to be this policy, when you come here, give us the policy, say this is the policy. We don't want stories as a portfolio committee. We want facts. So please, in our next meeting, do this. Look at your plan, your first quarter plan, and the items that you said you're going to deliver, deliver them. Give us those items. Don't tell us that they are there, or keep quiet and say, we could not achieve this. Tell us what has happened in that area, line by line. I think it's important. That is important for us. This was said in the last meeting. We need to get documents 10 days before the sitting, so that as the portfolio committee members, they are able to look at the document and to interrogate the document. We can't do that when we get the document while we are here. It's very difficult for us. Members belong to several committees, and they have a lot of work to go through, a lot of documents to read. So give us enough time to be able to exercise our duty. I will now call upon the department to just give us a brief report on the meeting that we had with the Deputy Public Protector. Members will remember that on Tuesday last week, I was invited as the chairperson of this portfolio committee to the office of the Deputy Public Protector in connection with Sarah, not this one, Sarah without an H. I thought, you're getting shocked. No, Sarah without an H, the Roses Association. And we, just to say to honorable members, that we had a good meeting there. We were able to discuss things in a manner that was quite calm. Especially for those areas where sometimes the going to be on the radar screen of the portfolio committee, so that we ensure that both sides deliver on the issues that are in the agreement. So, but I'm just going to ask Monica to briefly just tell us what the agreements were, just the agreements, and then what you have done up to this point. But I think later on you will maybe some in our next meeting you bring us a written document. Over to you, Monica.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to members of the committee. As was pointed out by the Chairperson last week, on Thursday, we had a meeting with the Deputy Public Protector, part of an ongoing process with regards to a settlement agreement reached between the South African Roadies Association and the Department of Arts and Culture that sort of brought to a particular point a very long and difficult relationship between the department and the South African Roadies Association. There were essentially a number of key elements to the settlement agreement which pertained to support for the South African Roadies Association programs. That support is ongoing through the international relations program that we support. There has been movement on the issue of the renovation of SARA House, which is a building that the South African Roadies Association owns in Newtown. The department has made 10 million rand available, and in discussions with the South African Roadies Association, there were some questions about how to do it, and the meeting with the DPP and the chairperson gave us a degree of clarity. We will be working through one of our facilitation organizations, such as the Independent Development Trust, the IDT, to facilitate that renovation project. And further, that we will assist the South African Roadies Association as far as we can with raising the balance of the funds required to finish renovating the building. The further request from the South African Roadies Association was that the department facilitate funding requests to agencies, etc., etc. And the third was that we continue to work in a harmonious and cordial manner. The meeting, I think, really moved us along in terms of the harmony and cordial relations component of it, because it was a very civil meeting, and I think it really did make some strides. So the agreement, as the Portfolio Committee Chairperson pointed out, was that matters pertaining to the settlement agreement would be reported on regularly by the Department of Arts and Culture in the Portfolio Committee, and that we will, next time we're here, actually present a formal report. But immediately coming out of that meeting, there was an agreement that the Department of Arts and Culture would essentially create an implementation plan with clear dates specifically pertaining to the renovation, and to some degree the facilitation of the support for the further funding that's required to really finish the renovation project. The South African Roadies Association was requested to provide information by Friday last week, which was received, and the DAC has now until the 31st of August to develop that implementation plan, which we are currently doing, and what we hope to be able to do next week when we come to the Portfolio Committee is report on the progress of the development of that implementation plan. So at this point, Chairperson, things are fairly on track, and we will be having discussions with the IDT shortly about what possible role they could play in the renovation of the SARA House project, so that we are able to really populate that implementation plan in a way that's very practical and that creates clear deadlines and expectations. The facilitation of the support, essentially, we will issue letters of support to SARA and essentially write to the agencies that have been identified. But obviously, there are a few guarantees that can be provided there. But the department will do its best in ensuring that those elements of the settlement agreement are facilitated. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the members?
On SARA without an issue. But I think for what's important is for us to get the document so that we can tick as you go, say this one has been done, why have you not done this one? So in our next meeting, we will expect to have that document. At this point, ladies and gentlemen, I would like us to introduce ourselves, because we are now getting into Sarah with an H. So I would like us to introduce ourselves and welcome Sarah. As you may know, 80% of the budget of the Department of Arts and Culture is transferred to entities. And as the portfolio committee, what we've realized since we came in last year is that there is a lot of work that has to be done to assist the entities. And we are pushing the department, actually pushing them to ensure that they do what they are supposed to do, to monitor the entity. As we monitor them, they must monitor the entity. This is why you will see that before the entity presents, we ask the department to give an overview. We want the department to have its thumb on the entity, on the map of the entity. Because if they don't, it means the entities can do as they like and get away with murder sometimes. So we are ensuring that the department does what it is supposed to do within the legal framework, and we are also there to do what we have to do within the legal framework. We are now going to introduce ourselves. I don't want to take this for granted that we all know each other. And I am Oliswa Tom, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture. Another thing.
My name is Mahatma, and I'm a member of the
committee.
I'm Fanny Makanya, the chairperson of SARA.
My name is Reyes Swaka Jusa. I'm the CEO of the South African Education Association.
Good morning, chairperson, honorable members. My name is Tati Musisi. I'm the chief financial officer.
Good morning. My name is Greg Austin. I'm a member of the Historic Council.
Good morning, committee. My name is Benji Malka, company secretary.
Good morning, chairman and the committee. My name is Imre Mome. I'm the leader of the SARA.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Lim Sadi, executive officer responsible for heritage and social management at SARA.
Good morning. I am Mama Kumran Hassan, corporate services executive at SARA. Thank you.
Good morning, chairperson, honorable committee members. My name is Irvin Lamassel from the Department of Arts and Culture.
Good morning, I'm Monica Newton from the Department of Arts and Culture, Deputy Director General for Arts, Culture, Promotion and Development, and Acting Deputy Director General for Institutional Governance. Thank you.
Ndiyabulisa amalungu endlu yowiso-mthetho igama lam ndingusimeon nkanunu kwi-office kaminister we-Arts and Culture.
I'm Geraldine Barai, and I'm representing PNG.
Good morning, I'm Nomal Trana, coming from Statistics South Africa.
Good morning, I'm Alistair Nostero from Unison Report.
Good morning, my name is Bob Fonsov, I'm from Statistics South Africa.
Good morning, honorable members, Chair Ali Rusha, Statistician General.
Good morning, Police Lamoga, the committee section.
Good morning, everyone. I'm a job leader in the Secretary.
Thank you very much, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. I'm now going to give over to the department. But before I do that, I would like to congratulate Sarah for the work that they are doing, for the sterling work. Because what we always say as the portfolio committee, whatever good you may be doing, but if you get a disclaimer from the Auditor General, you just pour black paint on all the work that you are doing. Because the minute the people out there see irregular expenditure, they are like, they are chowing the money. Not knowing that sometimes it's not the matter of chowing the money, but it's because you have used the money not for its purpose. You've used the money for wrong, for something that you had not planned, or for something that you had planned for another time. So I think you moving from disclaimer to unqualified, I think we applaud the work that you are doing as the committee. But what we are also as the committee looking at is when you get a clean audit, because this is what we are looking for, a clean audit. When you get a clean audit, there should be change in communities. We are looking for transformation as well. So I think you are achieving this right, and what we are going to look at is how you are achieving transformation that we are looking for as well as the society. And it is really shown that if you have effective leadership in an institution, you can achieve great things. So I think we want to applaud you, and we want you to do better, because what we are looking for is a clean audit as the committee. Can Monica give a brief overview, and then thereafter, immediately we will give over to Sarah to do the presentation. Over to you, Monica.
Thank you, Chairperson. In essence, SARA is established in terms of the National Heritage Resources Act, and committee, is this presentation loaded on a laptop anyway?
No.
Okay. In which case, Chief, in the interest of time, I'll do it quite quickly. Or should I just quickly connect?
No, I have a good.
All right. All right. Thank you. It's established in terms of the National Heritage Resources Act, number 25 of 1999, which outlines an integrated and interactive system for the management of national heritage resources. As an implementing agency of the DAC, SARA plays a critical role in the identification, conservation, protection, and promotion of heritage resources. It does so through the declaration of heritage resources, provisional protection, issuing permits in respect of heritage resources, and of course, enforcing compliance. In the 2014-15 financial year, SARA achieved 63% of its planned annual performance targets. 27% of those were partially achieved and 10% were not achieved. But as has been pointed out by committee chairperson, the organization has come a very, very long way through the dark days of a 2011-2012 disclaimer, to a qualification in 2012-2013, to a much brighter horizon in 2013-2014 and 2014-2015 with two consecutive unqualified audit reports. And again, the department would really like to congratulate the management of SARA on this progression. In terms of the status of council, council is comprised of 6 ministerial appointments and 9 provincial representatives. 4 of the 6 ministerial appointments attend council meetings regularly. Unfortunately, 1 member has not attended any meetings, and 1 member resigned because of an interest in the CEO position and obviously stepped back in order to apply. With regard to provincial representation in the council, Northern Cape representation is still outstanding, and the Western Cape representative has recently been appointed and is now attending council meetings. The term of council expires on the 31st of July 2016. The status of the provincial heritage resources agencies, functions pertaining to heritage resources are devolved to provinces, and the provincial heritage resources agency are a very critical function of the implementation of the Act. Unfortunately, not all provinces have fully functional PRAs as they are known, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and the Northwest in particular. But SARA has really stepped forward and is assisting these underperforming areas through an MOU that has really facilitated the functioning of the provincial heritage resources agencies to execute their functions. In terms of issues for noting, SARA has made a number of requests to the Department of Arts and Culture. The first is to reprioritize accumulative surpluses from completed infrastructure projects to fund office accommodation. The matter is currently being dealt with by our infrastructure unit, and the outcome will be made known as soon as possible. Further, SARA has requested to use $7 million from its capital works budget to host a heritage endowment. But we needed National Treasury's advice on this because, in essence, the funds were originally allocated for infrastructure. We're essentially planning on changing its intention. There's been a request for assistance with funds for salary increases. Unfortunately, we're in a cycle of fiscal shrinkage, so there are very real constraints in this regard, but discussions are ongoing. And there have been discussions with SARA about the possibility of extension plans being put on hold, and of course to motivate to National Treasury to medium-term expenditure planning process. Arising from the Ministerial Task Team on Monuments and Memorials, a task has been given to SARA to essentially conduct an audit of monuments and memorials. And there are ongoing discussions between ourselves and SARA about the funding of this particular project, because obviously it's a new area of work. With regard to office accommodation, SARA has requested whether or not the DAC would be able to accommodate SARA staff in Pretoria. They're currently accommodated at Ditsong Museums, and we've indicated that perhaps there should continue to be discussions at Ditsong with regard to the current police, as we can't really make a promise at the moment around accommodation at DAC, but perhaps as we move into our new premises in Medina Street, there may well in future be accommodation possibility. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. If there are any questions, can honourable members just note the questions, put them in the freezer, and then when Sarah has presented, we'll ask the questions at the time. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. Firstly, let me thank the Portfolio Committee for affording us this opportunity to come and present again in front of you. It is always an honour and a privilege to actually do such. With me, I've got my executive and my supporting staff, and some of the council members as well, that are in our midst. To that regard, I am just going to give a brief overview in terms of what you're going to present, and then I will then give the roles to my CEO to then basically present the entire presentation with regards to what we've been called here for. In essence, two of the sticking issues, and I'm actually very glad that you did make mention that not only should we report on the good that comes out of institutions, but even on the bad sides, because a problem never actually goes away until you actually then are able to resolve it, and fully and extensively so. So the two methods that we're actually sitting with is our property portfolio, but I'm actually glad to pronounce to honorable members and the chairperson that with regards to our property portfolio, we have made serious inroads with regards to that. We as council or the board, we actually instituted what we call a reprioritization strategy in terms of ensuring that not only are we looking after these properties, because with one coming from a built environment or the construction industry to that effect, we were then able to see that there can be return on investment with regards to the properties that we actually have. Hence, we then came up with a strategy to then reprioritize with regards to the properties that we sit with. This is basically a maximization plan. What a maximization plan talks to in terms of these properties is taking some of these properties and trying and seeing what is it that we can actually unlock in terms of value as a return on investment on our baseline. And that will only even help us with regards to our current funding, because one is then looking at an issue of having this institution as one of the self-sustainable organizations as well. And then secondly, there was one of the other issues with regards to in fact, it came out of the audit finding in 2012, in fact, the 2011-2012 disclaimer with regards to the management of the concentration camp. That came through an MOU that we had actually signed with the Heritage Foundation. That is basically currently underway. And what has happened there is that although there was a little oversight during the inception of the process, we as council took it upon ourselves to ensure that we then instruct the abilities to actually now put all the effort to ensure that this matter is actually resolved. And I'm happy to then say, as part and parcel of the presentation that we're putting in front of you, there is now facts that we can actually put on the table with regards to that, and substantiated information that can actually then be checked and balanced. So I think as and when you are given the presentation, you will then get to appreciate the amount and the extensive work that has actually gone into ensuring that that issue is actually resolved. So on that note, Chairperson and honorable members, let me then hand over to my CEO so that they can present the presentation, and then after that, then we can then fill off the questions that will come out. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Thank you. I will, Chairperson and Honourable Members, I'll go on the presentation of the property portfolio of SARA, and the CFO will then, with your permission, Chairperson, go over the presentation on the other request that you asked for, on the forensic audit of the crisis. Well, I will go the papers just the contents of the presentation. We want to press the portfolio committee on the performance of the portfolio, property portfolio of SARA, and also the plan of the modernization strategy. What happens, Chairperson, is that as an entity, we have, 36 properties. I will go through why we sit with those 36 properties. Ms. Newton from the DAC has outlined our mandate in her presentation in terms of who we are, what our role is, and we take pride in the fact that we are an agency of the Department of Arts and Culture, and that we also distinctively established to make sure that we conserve and protect, but also promote, as we had alluded to another contributor, our cultural heritage resources. We always emphasize that, because they are also natural heritage resources. Tina, we are responsible for the cultural heritage resources. So the portfolio, as I indicated, has got 36 properties. They range from buildings, from graves, from open plots of land that were bequeathed to the state. We have inherited them from our predecessor as an organization, which was the National Monuments Council, which was also preceded by the Historical Monuments Commission. So they come a long way in our books, Chairperson. They were donated to ensure their property, their protection, and prevent them from being demolished. It's something that we're also looking at in terms of how can we deal with some of them that we are of the view that we are also want to establish, are they of national cultural significance? Some of them would be of provincial cultural significance because they are great two sites. Some of them are of local significance because they are great two sites. So, currently they are all within our portfolio. But then what we have done then, when, as the Chairperson has alluded, when this council, the current council, took office in 2013, they were presented with their report on this property. And then they were taken to some of the properties, especially in the Western Cape. And I think we're fortunate because we do have in our council members who are targeted members who can see a gem. If to now see a property and this building is dilapidated, whether they see the potential. So they then went back and we discussed and we entered into robust discussions in terms of how can we maximize the properties, but also retaining their cultural status without destroying their cultural status. And in that way, Jefferson will also be able, as an entity, to contribute to socio-economic transformation, because some of them will be able to be utilized for the benefit of the communities within which they are situated. But also, we will be able to maximize our income-generating potential, so that we then, with the subsidy that we get from government, we can also top up our own revenue and our operating budget. So, as I indicated, some of them are very outside. There's a grave Jefferson just overlooking the sea in San Jose. Beautiful area where it's situated, but it's a grave of the former inhabitants of this country. We have to look after it, but it's at a prime blind spot. But we will let you go see it. Then there are open sites, as I've indicated. There are also monuments and buildings that we are looking after. What we have done, Jefferson, is we have developed a booklet with all the properties, and we have provided that booklet to the secretariat so that the members could also write time and go through the booklet. It explains each property, its significance, and also the legal status in terms of when was it declared as a national monument, and also in terms of what level site is it. Is it a grade 1 heritage site, a grade 2 provincial heritage site, or is it a local heritage site? So it gives one a clear indication of what we are dealing with. As I've indicated, some of them are burial grounds, like when they call a vault, it's a burial ground of some family that has been left to the stage to look after. So the majority of them, Jefferson, are in the Western Cape province. Some of them are across the provinces, Eastern Cape, Free State, Northern Cape, throughout the country, we do have these properties. What then we did, Chair and Honourable Members, is that we looked at them, and as I indicated, we discussed a property maximization strategy and came up with a plan in terms of what are we going to do, and we identified some of those, most of them are in the Western Cape province, that we could, we had a concept on each one. What is it that we can turn this property into? And then what then we did was to identify an architect who can then develop that claim into drawing, so that we can see what is the potential of this. Then after that, we will then have to appoint a property developer who will then look at this plan and look at this design and see then what are the potential. So what would we need if say, for instance, the one in Straight Bay we want to turn into a resort, how much would we need to improve it, upgrade it, even build some cottages, and then what would it cost us? And then what would then be the return on that investment, and how long would we get that return on investment? So it's not going to be something that we acknowledge that it's not going to be something that's going to happen overnight. However, it's something that we are working towards, but we need to start somewhere. The fishermen, only teased here because they call it Drewspy. They say it's Straight Bay. So it's a fisherman's cottage. It's a very, there are old buildings, and you have to be passionate about heritage to see the heritage significance of the building. The other challenge, members, is that we always see differently with the developers. As I said, the developers will see the potential for development, and they will see a heritage site that needs to be protected and preserved. And then when we look at accountants will see a heritage property that is for the value. and then we engage with the accountants to say you can't put a value to a heritage property. But those are the debates that are ongoing as we have had to do grab one or three and put a value in these heritage properties. So then what happens here, we inherited a situation where these properties, these cottages, were given because they I think at the time after the professors looked at them and realized that they won't be able to look after them. So they gave them to potential tenants who were to lease the property, and it was agreed that you then rehabilitate, keep it in its original form, pay for maintenance thereof for 25 years, which is a very long lease. And the lease says that you can renew it for further 2 terms of 25 years, which means you can have this property for 75 years and you can have it at ₦1 per annum. So that, as we look at it now, something that's really, those people were thinking in their wisdom, but I think we need to review it and revise it. Some of the property, the tenants use them as holiday resorts, so they don't stay there for a full period of throughout the year. They go and visit them as and when they want to be at the different area. At the prime land, that's by the sea, in the Agala area, and it's a beautiful property. But it's also, when you look at it, it needs to be maintained. You need to keep its original form, but you need to allow it to also be a property that you can live at as of today's standards, if there's anything like that. So what we did then is we also realized that in terms of the National Monument Council Act, the then National Monument Council Act, if you were in a lease agreement, you had to get, before you enter into a lease agreement, you had to get permission from the minister. So what we have realized is that none of that had taken place. There is no confirmation from us at our disposal to say that before these agreements were entered into, the then minister was consulted and gave permission for that to happen. So we are engaging our attorneys then to get out of the lease agreement, because the lease agreement says that you must notify within 1 month if you want to extend for the second 25-year term. So the first 25-year term has come to an end, and some of the tenants had complied with the agreement. They wrote a month before to indicate that they want to continue the lease. Some of them didn't. So we are looking at all those legalities so that we can actually get out of this lease agreement. And I am advised that we had there were engagement with the minister before, and the minister has given us those marching orders to address this issue. So what we are planning there for chairpersons and whatnot and honorable members for this is to then use these build more. There are 9 cottages in that area. It's a big plot of piece of land. We want to build other cottages and turn them into 1-bedroom, 2-bedroom, and 3-bedroom cottages. We would then have a restaurant in the area. We also, in terms of the plans, would have a space for a tennis court. It would be a family-friendly space when we are done with it. But it would help us to generate more income. We've also engaged with the municipalities because we had to get in touch with the town planner in the municipality and present our plans so that we also get their approval. We also have to go to the Western Cape Provincial Heritage Authority because it's a great 2 sites to also explain to them what we are planning to do about this bit of land and the property. Currently, Chairperson and honorable members, it looks like that. It's fine if you're not going to stay there forever, but it's livable, but it's not ideal. But those are, the impressions of what we would like to tell it to be, so that people can, as I said, modernize it, and then people can easily go and rent it out. And of course, we are not in the business of hospitality, so So we would have to get somebody who is in that business to answer that. And now we are cultural activists, and we also still want to maintain the cultural significance of the product. So that's the trade by product.
And then Jefferson, in Carl, we have got a big piece of land, 240 acres of land. It's a farm. It's called Davio Sabata. At the moment, it's threatened because when we went there the other day, we realized that some communities around are using it as a dump site. Some section is used as a dump site. There's litter that is there. So our first priority is to fence it off so that at least we keep it protected. But also, we when we engaged with the municipality, we realized that they were also looking at putting up a cemetery in that space. So we really have to move back in terms of protecting that space and fencing it off. So we have got approval from council to utilize some of the funds and put up a what is a big plot of land. It does have a certain cottages where people used to, we also again had tenants here, people used to live here. We have successfully evaded, evicted some tenants there. We got sheriffs involved in that because they were also, some of them were not paying rent. Some of them would leave when we were evicting them, but then leave behind their family members. So we had to get into the process of evicting their family member as well. But there is what we want is to have a heritage village in that space. Something similar to Peer experience in around Stellenbosch. So we're looking at that, where we would have that heritage village and the hub of activities. As you can see, it's a big piece of land. Yes, there's also land that can be cultivated. So we'd like to see ourselves contributing to the communities around for social, socio-economic empowerment so that people can use that land as farm land. We've already started engaging with the communities, the community there of Rastafarians who are into agriculture, but we wanted to incorporate the rest of the community. So that's the plan for that. And of course, that indicated, Honorable Members and Chairperson, it's not going to happen overnight. We're looking at just 3 years in the outer years to have at least this finalized. That's Galeosa Park. And then we have a house in Simon's Stuff. It's called Welcome Cottage. They say the deputy fiscal of Simon's Stuff, they had a chief of land, and we got it from that. It's a big house, and then it's got what they call an annex, and also a cottage behind it. The house itself, the annex has got people who are renting it. And I think they're paying about 4,000 rents per month as renters. But the house itself, the front house, is in a state of disrepair. So we would like to start by renovating it. What we are proposing today is that we could have a it's in Simon's Town and it's not far from Fishhook as well. So we could also have a center, a wellness center there where we can have a spa and a wellness center. People can go there and relax and get all those things that we get when we go to our spas. But also, as I said, there's an annex, there's a flex behind. We could also get it's within, it's not in a very big space, it's within a residential area. So it's a good space for people who are entrepreneurs or people who are also in their private practices to rent it out. We have already been approached by a doctor, for instance, who wanted to rent out the space, but we, and he wanted us
to give it to him so that he can upgrade it and maintain it. And then we were weary of the 1 rand notion, so we would like rather to make it good first, so that when we rent it out to him, we rent it out at market, at the market rate. So that's the welcome cottage. And then there's also another property in a prime space that's called the Port Space. It's in Newsbeck, along the main road, and overlooking the sea, literally overlooking the sea. When you go there, you can see that it could be a brilliant museum. It does have artifacts, it does tell the story, but those artifacts are worn out and it needs to be upgraded, and it could be a good attraction, but you don't even have to look for patrons. It's within a space that is abiding with people walking along the beach. So that's the background to it. It had some, the outside vision that used to be a horse stable as well. It was during the Dutch East India Company that it was used as a lookout point for enemies entering the horse space. But it tells the story inside. But again, the stories that are told, it's a very good property, Chair and Honourable Members, where you can tell the social history as well of what was happening at the time, how people moved and how people found their way in the Western Cape. It would be a very good story to tell there. So we're looking forward to turning that as well into a property that we can also have a conference center so that it gets busy. People can go in there, enjoy the museum, but also use the property. And it's got a lot of potential. There will be off-street parking as well, that so that people can be able to use it as a conference facility. And Chairperson and Honourable Members, we do have another property in Falkenberg. As you can see, it's, you know, how people demarcate their property. It's within a square, but some of it belongs to us, and some of it belongs to somebody else. So we're sharing that piece of land with the University of Cape Town. So what had happened, in one of the members, is that UCT had then, it's using each portion to, it had built a hotel. I think it's the Protea group that is helping them to run the hotel. But then as they were building, they also built on the park that is our park. So there is a wing of that hotel that when I engaged with them, I told them that you're building on my land. I felt good to that I own this piece of land. So the lease agreement that was entered into was saying that they will be paying us 74,000 per annum and escalating 10% per annum. So it also has got a restaurant, it's called the Fig Restaurant, that UCT is renting out, and UCT is generating income from that restaurant. So what we have done then, the council agrees that we must go and negotiate with them and request that, for starters, that they increase the rent to 200,000 per annum. But going forward, they are away. They are also going to look at, because they are trading on that property, because they have also built on the property, and we cannot ask them to take that portion that they have built on our land and remove it. So we need to enter into an agreement in terms of what is the best solution going forward. This is the starting point to say that at least pay us 200,000 per annum, and then from there we will negotiate in terms of going forward, what is it that we are going to, which will be a market-related renter. But they also plead that the amount of money that they generate, they use to pay for the previously disadvantaged students so that they subsidize their fees. So there's that element as well, that they put up some tax they put in front of us. But we are saying that no, we really need to engage further and see what we can agree on going forward. But for now, they have agreed to increase the rent up to 200,000 per annum. The next slide is just telling the story that I've spoken to. What is
also then why we are confident that we really need to implement this property maximization strategy, that currently we are paying more than what we are getting out of all the properties, because we have to secure them. For instance, I had just approved that we increase our contract with ADT for Dario so that to cover more property, because we have had some breaking. So it costs us to maintain the property. So as they are more of a liability than they are an asset. And the other thing that we also have had to deal with the AG is to say that they want us to raise this as investment property. And we had a huge engagement with the AG to say they are heritage property. We are paying more than what we are getting out of them. Any person who looks at just profit and loss can see that they are actually not investment profit. But the accountants are saying no, the fact that we are not making money does not mean that they are not investment property. If you are renting them out and you are not renting them out to maximize income, that's your loss, but we will raise them in our financials as investment. So which means our financial statement will project us with having a lot of income, and yet we actually do not have. So we have a lot of property and we don't have. So, Chairperson and Honourable Members, we are committed to take this forward. We are committed to ensure that those properties that we can at least generate income without losing their cultural significance status, we will do so. Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Members. I'm going to present our report on the grave investigations that we undertook in 2013. Given in terms of the background of the investigation that unfolded in 2012-2013, given the disclaimer audit report that we had received, one of the things that were requested for SARA to undertake was to investigate the irregular expenditure that was reported in the disclaimer report, as well as the assets that were reported as having gone missing within the institution. We did heed the call and implemented the recommendations from also the portfolio committee, but during the investigation, the investigators also uncovered some graves that were supposed to have been done by the Heritage Foundation, but were never completed. For the investigation, we had appointed UMEC, who was appointed through a normal procurement process. They came in at an amount of 1.4 million to conduct the entire investigation. An MOU was entered into between SARA and the Heritage Foundation on the 17th of January. That was during the period of the then CEO, Mrs. Bongile Van Dam, and the Heritage Foundation, which was headed by General Offerman. One of the issues that were identified by the investigating company was that in the MOU that was signed, there was a clause which stated that the parties are desirous of entering into an arrangement for the establishment of a framework for the conservation and management of mutually agreed white and black concentration camps, graves and cemeteries, including the beggar graves of the Anglo-Boer War.
funds totaling 2.2 million were transferred to the Heritage Foundation by SARA. In tranches, the first funds were released on the 31st of May 2011, 750, on the 9th of November 2012, 750,000, and 31st of May, 750,000. The first 750,000 was released during the tenure of Mrs. Fandame. The second two amounts were released during the acting of Mrs. Mabaso Ramaphosa. Chair, I would also like to explain that the Heritage Foundation was not one of the issues that were specifically raised in the disclaimer audit reports that were received by the entity. It came as a by the way during the investigations when the audit the investigation team identified those grades that were part of the procurement that was irregular. That's how we then extended the scope of the scope of the investigating organization to include specifically the Heritage Foundation. The objectives of the investigation now for the Heritage Foundation was to conduct a review of the respective MOU entered into with SARA, investigate any irregularities that were identified regarding the restoration of grades, determine if there was any preferences or segregation in respect of work undertaken by the Heritage Foundation, reconcile and review all payments that were made to Heritage Foundation, request and review the statements of income and expenditure for the respective years relating to the funds that were received, request and review the breakdown of expenditure incurred, identify and investigate any irregularities in terms of the statement of income and expenditure from the Heritage Foundation, conduct physical site inspections when necessary, determine ownership of sites, investigate any irregularities, conduct interviews when necessary with the relevant stakeholders. The reason why the objectives were so detailed it was also because during the first investigation that was undertaken, there were elements of poor management of the entire project from SARA. And this is one of the reasons why now we wanted to investigate if whether the monies that were released served the purpose that they were intended for. At the time of concluding the MOU, there were no specific projects identified. However, subsequent to that MOU, between Mrs. Fandame and Mr. Peely, who was the manager for burial grounds and graves for SARA, a list was then sent via email listing all these projects that were requested to be the projects that will be undertaken through that MOU. The initial amount projected was 3.4 million. As you can see, that the only amount that was released was the 2.2 million. Now, the investigation also reveals that over and above the projects that were listed, the Heritage Foundation went ahead to identify additional projects. The MOU was very clear in terms of how variations should be handled to the initial list that was provided. However, due to the inadequate management of the project at that stage, it would seem General Offerman saw the opportunity to add more grades, which were in any case relevant to what SARA would have done, but we didn't have any annex or an addendum that suggests that there was an agreement entered into with SARA. Hence, the investigators saw this as additional work which was not condoned by SARA at that stage. The investigation also identified these projects which were done to the value of 504,000. According to the report, yes, they were not agreed upon upfront with SARA. However, the report also suggested that SARA could condone these projects as they were within the scope of what the Heritage Foundation would have done and within the mandate of what SARA would have done. In terms of the findings from the investigators, that SARA notified the Heritage Foundation of the breach of clause 15.9, which talks to consultations if there are any variations to the contract. because there was nothing that was supporting the additional projects that were added, the investigators felt that it was a breach of contract in terms of the MOU that was signed. The findings also further stated that the former Mrs. Pandam, Mr. D. Sibia, and Mr. Fili failed to protect the interests of the black concentration camps heritage sites by allowing the MOU to focus only on what white concentration camps and heritage sites. There was no budget provided for the salaries, the security, purchasing of new vehicles, other general expenditure. Now, based on this analysis, then the investigator's report concluded that Sarah should actually claim back $1.6 million from Heritage Foundation as they did work which was not covered within the MOU at that stage. Now, as we then analyzed the report after it was concluded and engaged the Heritage Foundation General Oberman himself, unfortunately, Mr. Pili was not in the employ anymore. We could not get any information from him. Even after subsequent interactions, he refused to take part or respond, stating that these things were done a long time ago. He can't remember. We then looked at the work that was done and concluded that even though the increase in the scope was not signed off within an agenda, it was still work that would have been done by SARS. Analyzing all the projects that were done, we all concluded that the black rates were included in those lists. One of the things that came to the fore was that it was difficult, based on the surnames also, to conclude that this is a black rape or a white rape, because you'd have black people who had Afrikaans or English surnames. However, given the breakdown that Jan Oberman provided subsequent to this report, it was then discovered that yes, indeed, there were black race. They were not in the majority, but there were black race that were also cleaned and repaired. The finding that only 313,000 of expenditure is legitimate, it was incorrect because the report should have noted that projects that were undertaken were also within the mandate of SARS. What became very clear in this entire investigation was that SARS did not have proper project management on this project at that time. The work was done, and from the work that was done, reports were submitted to SARS. It was not like the Heritage Foundation was doing work and not reporting to SARS. We were able to find the reports that were submitted to SARS explaining what was done with the money that was issued. Let me also explain that when the report was concluded, there was information which was not given to the investigator. This information included a letter that was signed by the former acting CEO, Mrs. Ramakoshi, where she specifically thanked the Heritage Foundation for the sterling work that they have done on the grave. And in that letter, what was attached was a list of projects that Heritage Foundation had done, which included projects that were not on the initial email, which then said, the fact that we released the 750 twice in that year, it meant that we released those funds based on a report that was given, progress report that was provided, projects that were that were concluded, and projects that we had condoned. By accepting Offerman's report and releasing another tranche, it then meant we condone the projects that have been done. Now, one of the issues raised in the previous slide was that there were no provisions made for salaries and vehicles and all the administrative things that needed to assist Offerman in executing those projects. When Offerman submitted his responses, his report to SARS, everything was detailed line by line. I went through the reports because as the CFO, I had an interest in making sure that we recover this $1.6 million. So when I looked at all the reports that were given, each report stated clearly, we paid so much for salaries, we bought this truck that was used to do the grave, all the assets that were purchased were reported to SARA Afand. Not even in any single communication did SARA then refuse the report or reject the report on the basis that the things that were acquired were not part of what was agreed upon in the MOU. In their action, in our action as SARA, then it meant we condoned what Jan Opperman was doing. We had a meeting with Jan Opperman, who was not happy in terms of this investigation that has unfolded, and he provided further information. I subsequently then met with the investigators to discuss now all this new information that has come out after the report was closed, and they were quite astounded and disappointed that this information should have been given to them in the first place. And their conclusion was that if they were given this additional information, they wouldn't have raised some of the findings that were raised in this report. And they also concluded then that based on the statements that we got from Jan Opperman and based on the letters that were signed by our own CEOs to Jan Opperman, therefore they are also concluding that there is no issue within the recovery of the 1.6 million. Therefore, what needs to be done by the organization is to look at the assets that were acquired and decide if we want to officially hand them over to the Heritage Foundation so that they can continue with their work of maintaining the concentration camps or further enter into another partnership that will enable us to have support in terms of the continued maintenance of those graves. So far, the contract with the Heritage Foundation was cancelled as soon as the investigation started. Now that it's concluded, we need to go back, discuss the assets, hand them officially, and take forward our agreement with them to continue maintaining this.
Thank you very much, and I think honourable members are listening with interest because there are a lot of issues that are coming out of this presentation. The initial process of getting the money to this other foundation, and how did it get there, and you had a written document that is specifying what should be done, and I can't understand how all the things that you are reporting happen, but I'm going to give an opportunity to honorable members to ask questions. Because I honestly believe that, in fact, this is how we operate here. If the department comes with a plan to say this is what we're going to do, we pass a budget in line with what they are going to do. And they can't chop and change on what they go and do what they want to do. They go out and do what they want to do, because we measure them according to the plan that they have given to us. So if you are saying that this is what we are going to do and go and do something else that's not in the plan, that's what the auditor general will come and say it's irregular expenditure. Because you have done something that is not in your plan. So I'm going to give an opportunity to honorable members to ask questions. Honorable
Makondo, Honorable Mokosi, Honorable Melzer, in that order.
Thank you, Chair. We welcome the presentation by SARA. And Chair, we want to put it that I think it was a detailed presentation. I've got very few issues to
in the main might not contribute in terms of revenue that much like other institutions that they are competing with. I just want to understand, they presented a number of plans which they intend to implement so that in the process they are able to raise revenue. What I want to understand is to, in the process of that, do they draw a balance between their mandate and what they seek to do in those particular projects? For example, if you, when there's a grave, you go in and act, let me say a lodge like you're putting it. That particular grave, when that particular lodge is erected, will not lose its historical significance. Because people will visit not necessarily to come and see the grave, but they will visit because they want to go out and to be in the very beautiful lodge that I've seen that you intend to. So I just want to understand that particular point. I understand the idea that you need to generate revenue. Yesterday I went to Robben Island. I took my friend to Robben Island. I was one of my colleagues. There were a number of tourists that were there, but I was on oversight. There were those who were visiting Robben Island, but I was doing oversight, and there are a number of things that I've seen. And I think when the management of Robben Island come, will be able to engage at that particular level. I suspect you might want to compete with them in terms of revenue. That's why I'm asking that particular point. It's one area that I want to do. Are you able to draw a balance between that? Number two, talk to the forensic investigation. I think I will need to be educated. There are a number of things that I do not understand. The CEO was presenting that they've appointed Uber to conduct an investigation. Whether the final report was produced, it was never said. What we heard is that management commented on the report. I guess it was a provisional report, not a final report, because you can't comment on a final report. If it had happened that you commented on a final report, and you decide that you disagree with it, then what? Because management can only comment on the provisional report, so that the final report, when it's out, your comments are included, are taken into consideration there. And that, if it's out, it has to be implemented. With no exception. But if it happened that you commented, because you never said that there was a final report, if it happened, what is that? What is it? What do we call that? I think it's one area that I need is to be clarified. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Cook. That's your question. Thank you. Chairperson, some of us are learning in the community, especially on the issues of heritage. And the township gets some courage. So my orientation would be if I study Paraguana for Pitanawatom. So despite being here on the National Portfolio Committee, I think I needed to be educated so when I go back, I could educate those who are there in Ghana. Chairperson, when the department area outlined what is Sarah to me, I wanted to see that identification, conservation, protection, and promotion. And here we are talking about heritage resources, compliance. And before I start, let me welcome the presentation, both presentations. But I'm interested in terms of a portfolio investment on the issue of property. You see, Chair, you know, when we talk about issues of accounting, Sananama actually, they just guys to put numbers and the numbers must affect. That is their specialty. And they're good on that. And when you talk about issues of property, you are right, the presenter is the value that you see. But isn't it the value that we're talking about is the value of heritage? There's a first property, the Fisher Cottage. It's a nice property for me, and I would love to go there to see the, to have the feel of that area. But if now you are thinking of changing it to something different, will it be relevant to somebody maybe after 10 years, like Fisher Cottage, in terms of the infrastructure, the furniture, and everything? We can modernize, I understand, but it's going to lose the cash somehow. The second one is the land farm. I put them accordingly. Yeah, on that one, I will agree in terms of issues of security, especially on farming, that it can be incorporated because there's nothing that can change it. On the welcome cottage again, to be turned as a wellness center. Cape Town is full of hotels, wellness centers, nice of them. So now you are getting into hospitality, whether you like it or not. Because sooner you do that, you need to register. Whether it's going to be 5-star or 2-star or 1-star. So you need to comply. So I don't know where the, our heritage now. Issue of the last one, it was the, what the project, if I'm calling it right. In terms of the heritage museum, you see when you present on this one in the field to say, no, I mean a right thing. You see, you wanted to present the authentic of the culture or the authentic of the heritage of the country. So one would say before maybe this thing, it would be there's a business model on it. But let the business model mustn't cheat the heritage. I don't think the person that held that property in Fisher Cottage or the family, when they come one day, they find another 8 rooms alone. And I wonder what kind of the structure it will be. If it's going to be the same like that one, it will be like this is the heritage that you're doing, the main house. But if it's going to be the modernized one, the problem. Remember, not everybody wants to go to a modern hotel. So it's a two-way thing here. Issue of a property generating, sustaining yourself, but provided it doesn't kill the authority of our heritage. And what Honorable Makonda is raising, what if I'm just asking in the Fisher Cottage there was a grave inside that yard? and in any culture neglected thing, you can't build a retain where they were created. But that family would want to retain its original nature. So I don't know what person. It's a two-way test. For sustainability is good, but for modernizing it in terms of to be modern with that same issue that you show either that nice one, I don't think it will be assisting in retaining the heritage of that thing. So this is the thing that we needed to check. And again, the issue of the property portfolio, especially on the entities, I'm worried. You know, really, the agency will know their financial aid, how it is in terms of where the auditor said. But I'm going to be worried when you go deeper, when changing the thing into hospitality and focus on the issue of the property investment. Especially with the state of the entities that are not functioning well under the department. Isn't it that you're going to drive it to do more much in business and forget what is the mandate of it? Or number two, the issue of the compliance, somehow, Chair, maybe after the 6th Parliament, what you have approved by the ECHN Chief? Because when you talk about property investment, there's a lot of mandates coming in. Issues of accountability. I'm worried because I'm raising this because you know the entities in the department. They are saying, I'm not talking about your starting broader. Issues of cancer, even in some very big cancer, so we don't know if it will kind of hold on what's going to happen. So these are the things, Chair, that we need to check. And again, issue of a property portfolio investment is where that you see lots of the service providers coming in. You know, service providers and the name. These asset managers that are coming in. And it's where this thing, the bus starts, okay, the issues of corruption. Whether we like it or not. So these are the things that one will just raise to say, how are you going to deal with it? By turning all these things into hospitality, I don't think it will be advisable. Maybe check how are you going to do the issues of the architect. If you want to change the future cottage house, putting that 8-1, how is going to be the structure? Is the structure going to be different like the original house or not? You know, those are the things. And the wellness one in terms of the welcoming cottage, it's a really good link with education issues of museum. You said the house is deep and you see where they said that your child wants to leave. It can be two things educationally, whether you put, but on the issues of hospitality, I'm worried. Because now we are taking the tourism way, which is one day we're going to have a joint meeting with the tourism committee and us in discussing these issues of protecting our heritage. Chair, on the second presentation, I'm so confused now, especially this one. I think I will come back. I need to apply my mind well because really I don't understand what is happening because a lot of now that I can. Thank you. Hello, before, where, because I'm getting this neglect. It's like it's only Western Cape. May I ask, there's not any heritage or site or anything in Gauteng. But maybe we are having, or in Limpopo, because I can't even pronounce this name out of them. Not to say I welcome it, but I'm asking that. In terms of the transformation, if my son can do this, I don't see that much transformation there. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. There are some from other provinces. You can page through the book in the meantime. There are some from other provinces. I've seen my province there, for example. Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairperson. Let me is that on the first report, there was mentioned of one member of the council that has never attended. Now, if I'm correct, the new council was appointed in 2016. Now, maybe that's a departmental problem. Is there a reason for that? And surely, if that is correct, I don't know who the person is, what the reasons are. If he's sick or something, all right, but otherwise the department should act in that sense. It's to appoint someone and he never attends, surely it's an alarm bell that is a problem. The second issue is on the provincial council. I see some provinces, my province is Northwest, there's no provincial PHRA. Is there a reason for it? Is it difficult to get them going? Can help in some instances, because surely it's important. And then I'm not exactly clear the relationship between the national and the provincial. These booklet that we got, are they all under national sort of guidance? Is there a difference between things that are under provincial guidance and national guidance? Now that they differentiate, I would like to understand that. And then I totally agree with my colleague, not always on my left here, on what she says, because I think she is exactly on the problem to get this balance right. And I really admire what they try to do. What I know about heritage is a very difficult thing, you know, to manage that and then still to try get money out of that is a very difficult one. Keeping graves in good condition is very important, but there's no money in that. Within a year you must do it again and again. So we must get that business model right. And I admire what they try to do with holiday accommodation, restaurants, wells, the centers, farming. But there's a big risk that you start going into all these businesses and in the end you're in trouble trying to run this and have accommodation sort of out here and a farm over there. The best maybe is, and I think that there is in some places, to get someone else to do that and they pay you, being a specialist there, and then use it. But best of luck with that, but I said I might have proposals to try and do that and to get this balance right, because you can run into trouble. And then you come back and say this farm failed. And the restaurant, we couldn't run the restaurant, and then we start running into trouble in a sense. And surely the department must also help to realize heritage costs money, and that you must, from their side also, that's what taxpayers in a sense pay, get by. The best, and that's my experience from abroad, is heritage tourism. It's the closest you get to something, getting something back in the end of the day, keeping the heritage right as a business model, and then getting people there to come visit and get some income. And then again, on my colleague on the left, even on transformation, I agree with her today. I'm quite glad to thank you for all the names in here. I can pronounce all of them. And I visited most of them. And some of my people died in some of them. And therefore, I thank them that they are in here. But I must agree that once we've got this model right, then surely people out there must also look at some other sites to represent the whole of South Africa. And then putting some names that I won't be able to pronounce. And then we get the balance right in every day. But to overstretch yourself, because I think they sort of inherited these things. Suddenly they did create them, they inherited them, and they're still looking after them. And even, and that I admire from this time. But surely to survive in the long run, we'll have to get that balance right without sort of getting the right model there. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much,
Honorable
Member.
Thank you, Chair President. I think honorable members spoke at length, but I think the one, if not two, issues that I want to talk about. Number one is numbering. I don't know whether maybe I can't see enough. The slides are not numbered. I would propose that in future you need to number them, because it's too difficult to repair the pages since I want to repair. Number two, the issue of investigation by Heritage Foundation. I think the investigation was informed by something. We can't have an investigation without anything. But there's no smoke without fire. But going into the report itself, I don't know whether
says if the investigation was constituted on the other side where the other parties were not agreeing with the investigation to take place. There is a slide of the objective of the Heritage Foundation, bullet number 2, which states it to investigate any irregularities identified with regards to the restoration and conservation management of identified burial and memorial sites in terms of the MOU. But when going to page number under the filing, bullet number 7, it reads, it would appear that the former CEO missed what failed to protect the interests of the Black Concentration Camp Heritage Site by allowing the MOU to focus only on white concentration camps stroke heritage sites. The reason I was saying that I don't think there would be an investigation that is not informed. I don't know whether the findings here are not correct. Since I heard the presenter saying whatever is the findings here is not correct. Even the report at the end, I think it's the second last page, the report is now closed and they are plans to further engage the Heritage Foundation for continued partnership. I'm not so sure whether this report is presented to the Portfolio Committee. Meanwhile, there is no need for the Portfolio Committee to engage the report since the report is itself is closed. I don't know whether I can get the explanation to say exactly what does they mean by this. But that issue of the issue under the findings, I think I do have a concern to say the interest was mostly for the white heritage site and not for the black. And really, when going through this, I didn't come across one of our former leaders, like the first president of the African National Congress. I think the days that are in between there, it should be taken care of if really the people who were doing this, they were concentrating on both sides. Thank you,
Honorable Member. If you want to come back,
okay. The Chairperson, thank you. On the forensic report, I think each and every institution, when it constitutes a forensic report or a forensic process, it's doing it because there's a lot of something. What another example has just said. And there are finances that is involved, there's a human capital that is involved. Of things that are there. And it can be just a report, you just close it. Close the report with 1 point something billion. So, and if the investigation chair was done by the council or the management of the agency, it's our money, it's not your money. The budget was passed at the parliament. We voted for that thing. Then was the taxpayers' money. So it can be then that today the report is just closing. Like that, there's something wrong. What about the remedial action? There were any remedial action? Or now is a handshake thing to say no, we investigated and there's nothing that you get. Or the investigation was personal to somebody wanting to get someone. Because really, it can be, you can't do an investigation. Imagine calling all those people, asking questions. It's a waste of time. Human capital is involved there. People that are supposed to be in their offices, they will withdraw maybe from their labor to account. But now, the record is closed and there are plans for further engagement with the Heritage Foundation for continuing the partnership. Why did you do the investigation? Who said the investigation? Why can you have something that at the end of the day you cannot sustain it? And I check, I think as this committee must take this the report is closed. Give us the remedy. If you saw the report, how are you gonna get 1.10 type of thing? This is a device so you can go to somebody else that happened to be prepared. And Chair, what about those people that they have? What if one day they will come to say, you said investigated us, but there's no any remedy that you could find on us? And if it was a decision that was taken by the board, it's scary. Why did the board do this? Because their mandate is to fulfill what is happening on the agents, and their mandate is practically. So I think we need a clarity on that, but you can't solve this if it doesn't give us the right answers. Why it was so?
Thank you very much. I'm now going to give Sarah an opportunity to respond to the question. And mine is if the department is aware of this report and the findings that you had from the report and the issue of closing the report. Is the department aware of this?
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I think maybe let's maybe try and take the positives and then we'll then get into the more negative ones as well. And I think what came out very clear was the issue then of the revenue generation that we were trying to do. Maybe let me just catch up that, given that one is within the building industry as well. And just to give comfort to the members, to then say, with regards to what we're trying to do in terms of maximizing these properties, we are not looking at now losing the balance between the heritage and the property. That's the first thing. Over and above, we're looking at a sense of concessionaries, whereby I'll use a typical example, which is the development on the L1 between Midrand and, in fact, it's in Midrand, it's between Johannesburg and Pretoria. Development? I've just forgotten the name of it. In essence, it's a concessionary agreement that they went into. You get property developers that then manage the property on your behalf. And then you then get revenue out of that. And maybe it's an agreement that you can go into for a certain amount of years. So we won't be actually managing the site as Sarah. And over and above that, while we will be involving property developers, in fact, over and above, there will be a feasibility study that then informs exactly the concerns of honorable members to then say the balance between heritage and development. Because what is then going to then come out of that is to then say we keep the significant value of the property. And while we are modernizing, honorable member, maybe you then look at your examples like what Europe does at certain points. They keep the fabric from the outside exactly the way that it was. However, on the inside, certain elements are kept to that effect, and then you then modernize some part of it so that it remains relevant to the current time because of the type of factor that you're actually trying to capture. So I think with regards to that, you can be rest assured that it will be approached with due diligence to ensure that the heritage fabric is still contained and maintained. So maybe from that aspect, let me then allow other members then to talk to the issues of the forensics, and I hope I have clarified with regards to the property modernization, what is it that we're actually trying to achieve as an institution. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Can we have other responses, please?
Thank you, Chair. I think I'd just like to pledge for the chairperson for the community, because I just think that subcommittee of council. And some of us come from a background of history, political science, and so on. And when we looked at this, when the property thing came to us before us, council, as new members of council, we saw these as problems. I saw these as a big problem. It is about extending our pain of money and old buildings and all the challenges of our community. And the chairperson of that subcommittee is an architect. And he said, but this is property. And property, you don't get rid of. You deal with it. How do you change it into something that becomes space? So those of us with this background of heritage and looking at things in that, suddenly we were invited for it because we saw this in this balanced way in the way we're looking at it. But it's only looked at the property. And this thing became, you actually see the heritage value and you see this income potential that you have. Whereas before that, I used to have some old buildings that were painted. People living in these beautiful places of paint, little rooms. Really was a challenge, but we see now that the vision is coming out. That was slowly moving on. And it's one of the things I'm most optimistic about being in South Africa at the moment. And really, I'm overwhelmed with what is happening. But we'll take it slow, and I think the consideration about the world is very important. We can have a story. What is the myth and what is the time management of Sara to achieve the preservation of what has come before us by actually trying to make money. And I think the chair has indicated clearly how Sara's role in this in terms of a hands-off approach by this is somebody else, so that we do not corrupt.
Thank you very much. And I think also what you need to do is to always have your vision in your document. Your vision in whatever document you're presenting, and if you have your vision, so that every action that you take is aligned to your vision. Everybody knows what your vision is, because as the committee will be looking, as the portfolio committee will be looking at your vision now and trying to align it with what you say you are going to do, because every activity should be aligned to the vision. And this balance, I think the committee, what it's stressing is that there should be this balance. And I think knowing that there are different people with different expertise in this committee is healthy, so that I come with my own perspective, and when we bring all these perspectives together, we bring out this product that is really going to move the country forward. So can we have other responses, like your council member and other questions? Briefly. Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, there was a Professor Pifo who was appointed to council by the previous minister when the council was appointed and inaugurated in 2013. In the letter, it is indicated, as the minister closes the letter, to say that Kaji indicates an acceptance of the appointment. And the committee secretary can also add. I'm made to understand that the professor did not accept in writing the appointment. So which meant then that the deal that's at you. It was a matter of the professor not having attended the meeting. It's actually the professor not having even indicated to the minister that he accepts
the appointment. Comment for social workers.
You never asked the history at that point.
Thank you. And then it means then we are left with that, the province of Northern Cape that does not have any representation in the council, and we have engaged with the Northern Cape because they do have a provincial heritage resources authority. They do have a chairperson of that trust, because normally the chairpersons of all the trusts by a legally formed part of the council. We managed together with the team to bring somebody on board from their council. So we hopeful that our engagements with the Northern Cape will bear fruit, because we still have a year to go before the end of the term of office for this, because we don't want to lose out on that scheme from that fact. And we have been engaging with the department through the government unit to say, because even with the Western Cape, they assisted us to push and ensure that the Western Cape does bring a representative of us. Then the Northwest does have their representation, and thank you, Honorable Member. I think we've taken note of the concerns raised by Honorable Member around balance between heritage and development and business. As before hashtag roads came in, we were already planning to have an engagement, a seminar on heritage and development. Because it's not just these properties, it's also, if you go to Limpopo, for instance, where developers want to mine, and then say, no, you can't mine here because this site is of heritage significance. Sometimes, or people leaving heritage value, where you have your traditional leaders going there to exercise their traditional rights, and people see gold, or they see the potential of business development. So there's always that that engagement between heritage and development that we need to continuously facilitate, because sometimes we are seen as developers as being the obstacle to the economic development of the country. So we have taken note of that, and we'll take heed of that advice from Honourable Member. Apologies, Honourable Member, for the unnumbered slides. We will correct that. We will also include our vision. Our vision is a powerful vision that we want to see a nation united, heritage as that's what we want to do. That's what we ascribe to. But I think I just want to highlight the fact that these are properties that were inherited, and it is by no means a reflection of the national estate of the country. It's by no means a reflection of all our monuments, of all our memorials, of all our graves, of all our heritage objects. We are in the process now, for instance, of declaring the Flint of Jaja and protecting it as a heritage object. We have also declared the memorial of the Star Wars that whose remains were repatriated from Moscow as heritage object. So we are mindful of the need to transform the makeup of the national heritage assets of the country. Ms. Newton has indicated that emanating from the minister's engagement on the statute, we have been mandated to conduct a survey, an audit of all the statutes that we have in the country. But also we always take the opportunity to say it's not just the monuments and statutes that we're looking for, or that consists of cultural heritage of the country. You do have, yes, as we say, the real graves, the grounds, your concentration camps, your graves, your war graves. You also do have your underwater cultural heritage, and it's also another element that has not been tapped into or promoted, so that people know that within, along our shores, we've got a lot of shipwrecks, and they tell that social stores link it to the communities and the people that are there along the coast, that were there along the coast, and how they engaged with those, and how they were affected by those ships that were coming to our shores. We also have a section that deals with paleontological sites, all those caves, and now for instance in Northern Cape, we are strengthening the walkways in the Bonderberg Cave, and that's going to promote cultural tourism as well. It would be our contribution to socio-economic empowerment in the country. We appreciate the Honourable Member's support for us to promote food security in the rest of that, but also to promote museums in the port case. But as I have indicated, we also take note of the caution that we must be guarded against any possible corruption that may come up as we go out and look for property developers and asset managers. But I think my chairperson has indicated that we acknowledge the fact that we are not in the business of hospitality. We therefore would then engage the services of the experts to assist us where we to go this route. But also what we need to indicate to honourable members is the fact that this is just a concept. These are just concepts. We still have to go through the process of a feasibility study to assess whether what we are thinking is feasible to implement. The first study we come back and say, no, not this way, that way. So we still have to come back to once we have done all those feasibility studies, to present to the portfolio committee the final phases of our proposed strategy. I think that the use of the word close is not necessarily perhaps close. Yes, I know it's close to say close, but we have not got a honourable member McCall a final report from the investigators. They were not just investigating this aspect, the concentration camp. They were investigating a whole range of issues that came from that disclaimer era. And as late as last week, they were asking from the former CEO, who is mentioned here, to have a meeting with her so that they can pose some questions or some issues with her. And they actually gave the questions in writing, and the CEO responded in writing, and they were saying, fine, thank you, now we are having an engagement with you. So they are then going to come up with a final report. So we have not engaged with the DAC in terms of the outcome of the investigation, because we consider it to be, as Honourable Makonda was saying, when you do an audit, then they present it to us, and then we respond, and then they come up with a final concluding impression of what they had investigated and what they have come up with the outcome of their investigation. So I think for me, honourable members, we could say that we, as I said, as late as last week, I saw communication, there was competent correspondence between UBEC and the former CEO, and them saying thank you, so that then they can come up with a final report. So what we need to do, Tina, from our side, is to push them to conclude the whole investigation. And I think there was a question from Honorable Makosi to say, why was the investigation initiated in the first place? The CFO can also explain further in terms of, because as she indicated, it was not part of the initial scope of the forensic investigation.
Thanks, CEO. Chairperson, the Heritage Foundation investigation came as a byproduct of the initial investigation that was requested based on the disclaimer of the findings. Now, as they were in
expenditure. One of the service providers was paid for conducting some renovations on one of the graves. And as the investigators were digging into what the service provider had done, they then came across the concentration camps, which were not done. There were pictures in the report of the board that said black graves and the other concentration camps that were done. And when he probed further from our officials, that's when the issue of the name of Heritage Foundation came to the fore. Now, the leadership at that stage, we were all new. And whilst we knew that there was an MOU with the Heritage Foundation, the deeper and inner details of physical inspection on what Heritage Foundation had done was not undertaken. And therefore, it became very interesting for the acting CEO to say, seeing that there's this information that is being revealed, let's dig into this information and conduct a forensic investigation on the Heritage Foundation so that we can get all the facts relating to the Heritage Foundation. Now, the report could have come out any direction in terms of being positive or negative, because it was more a confirmation and affirmation of the work that was done by the Heritage Foundation in line with the MOU. And that's when the scope of the investigators was then extended to say, yes, we have this Heritage Foundation, there is an MOU that was signed, but based on what was revealed on the ground, would like you to dig deeper and tell us if there were any irregularities. That's how the Heritage Foundation became part of the forensic investigation.
Thank you very much. Honorable Makonda, do you want to ask something? Is it a follow-up?
Yes.
Okay. Honorable Makonda, please go to the last question.
Thanks for the report. It's forthcoming in relation to the foreign speech investigation. But I have a problem, Chair, with the tone that is coming in relation to that. At least the answer provides for some logic. Under normal circumstances, when we have got a forensic investigation, it's something that you will not even report about it here up until it's concluded. The notion that I get is that forensic investigation is being rubbished even before it arrives to its conclusion, and I have a problem with that. And I want to talk to the Shepherdson of SAR because it's quiet on this. Not even talking to it when it's him and the Congress who initiated it. And they're the one who's supposed to talk to it. Not you, because it's investigating you as management. And I have a problem with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable
Chairperson, thank you. The CEO said that they are still going for a feasibility study in terms of property investment. But what we need to put in constant sense is to say that property managers in South Africa, I don't think that we will take a month to do a study. If you give them now, by Friday they will be taking it because it's on the tip of their fingers. So my question in fact is to the department. With what the agency has presented, especially in terms of modernization of the sites, the department needs to monitor this. We don't want surprises because there are full of surprises in this department. And I hope to the Council of SARA, you must uphold to the constitution of this country. Let anything not go wrong. Can we please be part of the committee? We need to know what's happening so that if it has then on the issue of the report, you see, Chairperson, when I was reading what it was like, they say the report is so small. What do you expect me to say? I would ask, why did you put to take? My question arises on what the report is saying. And if they say that the report has come after the forensic, I mean after the 18, whether it was part of your management queen letter or what, and if it was part of the MLP, how many MLP could you give in? Maybe focusing only on one. This will go back to your audit committee, especially in terms of the council. So to say, this report, it cannot be closed, and if you said you did it after the audit findings or the AGR report, so it was only the NPF that, because of the NPF is the one that will direct you, but the AG will give you to say, these are the remedies that you need to check. So my question is to say, if this forensic report comes from the AG to say that it must happen. Because Chair, we have advisor only, or AG, and we don't like to talk about the management plan that has come up, because the inflation. So another meeting there, the investigation they call an apple is there. But Chair, thank you for all the council to say the final report is still coming. So don't present this to people if there's a final report.
Thank you. I'm going to give you 2 minutes to respond.
Thank you, Chair and Honorable Members. Firstly, let me just address the issue regarding the silence from Council with regards to the forensic investigation, especially on the Heritage Foundation. Just a point of correction, for point of clarification, Honorable Member, to then say the point in question, unfortunately, was before our time. And I think you rightly pointed out to then say and to give advice to the fact that this report, until it's actually concluded, we shouldn't have actually presented it. We take note of that. And I then take cognizance of the fact that this matter, as and when it's brought to the portfolio committee again, we will actually ensure that all the T's and I's are actually crossed with regards to ensuring that we bring a solidified and a complete report to that regard. So it was just to clarify that fact that it was actually before our time. It is still ongoing, and then until such time it's actually concluded, we will come and actually present a proper report to that regard. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any time is your time. When you come into a position, you inherit the past, and you take into your hands the future. So like to say, it's a whole package. It's a package deal when you get into a position. Whatever happens in the past is your baby. So the past of that organization, the disclaimer in that organization, you've inherited it, in spite of the fact that you have given it to an unqualified audit. That disclaimer is yours, even if you were not there. So, but we are encouraging you as the committee to ensure that, because of the things that we see out there at the portfolio committee, where you find that the separation of powers between the chairperson and the CEO is very difficult, is a difficult space. And I think the department is taking cognizance. This doesn't apply to SARA, but in other entities. And we are hoping that the department will assist the entities so that we know exactly that as the chair, what does the PFN say about the authority of a particular entity? Because I think it's very important for us to understand this issue and to operate within the legal framework. And I think we would like to congratulate you once again. And we believe that you have really influenced this institution positively. And we are hoping that the work that you are doing will lead to the clean audit that we are pinning for as the portfolio committee. Because we want a clean audit, not unqualified with makers. Thank you very much. We are now going to step off this presentation, and we are going to invite SSA to give us a presentation. We've invited them because we believe, as the portfolio committee, that, as we said earlier, that we want to take it further than just overseeing what the departments are and entities are doing, but to ensure that we don't just shoot from the hip. We actually understand that the work that we are doing is aligned with what the society, what the country as a whole wants to achieve. We look at job creation, at elimination of poverty, and all those things that government wants to achieve. And we align our activities with them. And the creative sector is a sector that we believe as the portfolio committee is just a by the way sector. But it's a sector that is really creating, people who are involved in creating industries are job creators, not job seekers. But we believe that government has to do more, but we can't just say that. And this is why we've invited SSA to assist us to get to grips with what the situation is and how we can actually nurse government to the direction of assisting more in the creative industry. Because from local level, when you look at the ICTs, when you look at the budget, we find that the budget is not there for creative industries. So we have invited SSA to really assist us, and we believe that the department as well as Sarah, you are invited to stay and listen to the presentation, because we believe that if we share information, and we believe that SSA can actually drive us towards the right direction when we have deeper understanding of issues, it's only then that we can begin to achieve what we want to achieve. Looking at the National Development Plan, for instance, that postulates that job will be created in the activities within the service sector. And also looking at the white paper on culture and heritage, and looking at the golden economy. So all those issues, how do we fit in? We don't want to shoot from the hip. We want to have a deeper understanding and see how the creative industries are having an impact on the economy of our country. Because we want to change people's lives, creating jobs, dealing with the poverty and underemployment, that is there. How do we, where we are, contribute to that? Without much ado, I give over to SSA to present to us. And I believe that out of this, we will be as empowered, and we will be very empowered, and we will be able to go out there and have a positive impact. Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. President.
Madam Chair, and honorable members, and colleagues from SAWA, and colleagues around, I listened attentively to the presentation. Perhaps if I was asked to present, I would have presented a different presentation. Now I have a dilemma, but the dilemma is presented by this have a common ground to avoid all that. And I'm telling you, you have expectations on this matter. I want to relate to the expectations that my Russian colleague has on my competency in the volleyball. When I got the arena, I was school and everybody applauded and they were looking at my height and everything in Africa. But after 3 minutes, I was quite intimidated by the presentation because at times I was to measure, and I think the Honorable S. Member, of course, she comes from Gazi, and of course she talks about heritage as something that one would have to say. What about Barabana for the board? Ours is to count as heritage complex. And for people who are just dealing with numbers, it isn't yet much more complex. So the expectations, I hope, shouldn't be as highly raised as by my counterparts who are the Russian volleyball player, and then after 3 minutes I was told that I have my shoes. I wanted to be careful because this is a very complex area. My mother died in Barawana, and at the time when he went to see somebody from Kelsa, what I was seeing as well was a lot of salt and life force. Because we are using blue soap, I wanted to take this life point around there. So that I was told by my aunt that you can't take this to my area. And each time I go to that stage in Barawana, I don't know whether it's heritage or not, but I have a very fresh memory of this situation. And the life boy was the most important piece of commodity from because of its aroma and everything, as opposed to the smell as blue soap.
Bishop, can I help you? Please, I think we'll help him, and that great yellow suit of him would declare that.
So, in order to get through this, we thought that we should talk about the definition of culture, which I think you know. And then we usually use the global standards and data to clarify, or rather discussed and negotiated and agreed upon to UNESCO. And they have a framework for cultural practices. And then I'll go a lot more on that definitional process, which brings in where the thing is to say, the role, and that's right. Say, Madam Teresa, said that they have to provide the numbers so that we do know where we are at. And then, of course, we'll try and say, not so emphatic ways, because we are not in that stage yet. We are still experimenting. What have we observed from the economic dimension? Where are we on cultural employment? And then, of course, measuring the social dimension, and then, of course, conclusions and way forward in terms of actually building, because we haven't dealt with this as a major subject, as they say. So this is our kind of the presentation. And of course, the definition is about spiritual, material, intellectual, and emotional features of society, which is a very difficult thing to measure, including happiness. I know that we as statisticians measure GDP, and there's a lot of criticism towards GDP, because suppose you have different places. And you go to a bar, you get drunk, you see a GDP, you go back and fight with your wife. Your car gets crashed, she goes to hospital, all that raises GDP. So the negative aspect of all these kinds of things do not come in specific. Yet, what counts is difficult to measure. And therefore, not all that counts So the and it is not always it's not even easy to measure such beliefs, but then you have to look at proxies that represent those beliefs. And when you go by proxies, there are so many false positives in that state. So it's a very complex environment, I should say. And of course, then how we go through behavior and the practices that we have from beliefs and values of society. Then we have the changing environments of burial is very interesting. Figures when there were no mortuaries within 3 days you're buried. Now you can keep your corpse for 7 days and then you'll bury on a Saturday. Then when you're keeping those people, you have to buy cakes, some drink, and get visited. Here, then you are dealing with the cultural practice. But the people who produce the cakes and the like are in bakers, in a manufacturer. Now, the intersection of that manufacturing and the funeral create an interesting convergence. And the manufacturing is not a cultural issue, it doesn't have the spiritual thing. That's what we are trying to deal with. It's a very clear thing of mixing dough with this and that and we'll produce the cake and the flour. And the person who is mourning buys that for cultural purposes. But the stimulant for that manufacturing is a cultural part. Now, how do you deal with this? Because then there's money, you see, so when I was sitting here listening to the discussion, I was saying, well, it's a very complex issue. So the framework for cultural statistics, that presents the common set of economics such as production of services, social such as participation in cultural activities. We deal with this in terms of, and then we come to tourism. The definition of the tourist is someone who, for purposes, other purposes, stays overnight. Now, when I go to the funeral, I will be able to, because I slept overnight from my common place of abode, which is 50 or so kilometers away from where I stay, I'll be able to stay home. Now, when you take the numbers of people stayed away from home, for those things, like a funeral, I wouldn't like to say I was talking to my father's funeral, surely. I want to say I wasn't talking to my father. So this issue that they carry a lot of baggage with them. When you look at tourism statistics, I'll be labeled as a tourist. When I come to culture, I will actually be going there for cultural practices to raise my head or to raise those that I like. When I go to wedding, so now, where does the tourism start and where does cultural practices end? And of course, those cultural practices that are associated with honoring the dead and so on. So there are issues around things that are partially cultural, partially purely cultural, and how do you measure them and where do you draw the so, in order to get to this, there's something that we call cultural domains. And then, of course, those domains can be classified collectively as cultural. And there are other activities, including informal and social activities, like cinema studies, commercial cinema. Is it commercial? Is it cultural? Is culture, can you commercialize culture? Is it cultural? You can, I suppose, but now the framework for cultural statistics, the cultural domain, that cultural and natural heritage, performance and celebration, visual arts and crafts, books and press, audiovisual and interactive media, design and creative services, and including intangible cultural heritage, where there are a lot of transversal organizations. Those are creative lines that are being there, but at the same time, very hardcore, scientific processes that make sure that the algorithms are written well. So, what is the definition of culture for statistical purposes? I mean, they are robust and the challenge with robust and sustainable culture for statistical framework. Features will get the contributory processes that enable culture to create. So, the baking of the cake should now become a tradition to attend to come and mourn. Then it becomes part and parcel of this culture, because the way the cakes are served and the way the oros is also served and those who attend prayer and all kinds of things constitute this culture. So, and then how it is understood and so on. And of course, the mortuaries and the cars that have to be manifested, designed for that, and the labels that have to be put on the side of the cars. That design and the head that has to be there, the colors of the hair, the paint. So all these things, although they can be produced anyhow, they have a very strong cultural dimension to make sure that the plural profession is a big one and a big one and everybody gets attracted to it. In order to say the next funeral will even be much bigger, etc. So this entire culture cycle has to be major. So you have what we do in other areas of major GDP, we have what is called specialized accounts. So that we are able to capture these instances that are backed largely by other things other than those for which the specific items are manufactured. Now, so this is the creation, production, dissemination, exhibition, reception, and then of course consumption and participation of cultural. So the economic dimension has talked about this, that you actually have to use administrative data. Administrative data might be depends on what you want. That administrative data is created on the basis of the things that you want to count. And the counting then will be the houses that we have been talking about as units. Now, these units have to be understood in terms of statistics. So we convert them to statistical units. And then they will have associated data items. And those data items have to be measured across time to see whether this is increasing or generating better ritual. And then, of course, we have to now bring that into GDP, gross domestic product, what is the contribution of cultural art, and also in terms of employment, what is the economic end of the cultural art. So, the sad news is that, Madam Chair, things that Nigeria didn't do was to get a structure of the economy over a period of time. So I still need that assessment, but they never classified it. So we are in similar space in as far as cultural aspects are concerned, and culture as something, culture and art as something that has to be seen. We are in that space at the moment where we haven't classified that. And then, of course, we have to have central product classification, which is the identification of cultural goods and services as the license classified as such and conditions of contract. And then, of course, harmonizing commercial distribution and goods. These standards are very important. And then, of course, standard classification of occupation. If the person who sings for a living, dances for a living, that occupation is a cultural occupation, the one who takes cakes and works for a cultural industry, is that making part of cultural activities or is it part of manufacturing objects? So this is the state in which we are at the moment. And then, of course, I've spoken about the operational accounts, the expenditure according to purpose classification, so the expenditure by purpose. So here you will say, I bought those cakes so that I can come and perform this ritual of funeral. Now that expenditure is by purpose for cutting. Now, you need to understand that so that you know what incentives the culture, or rather contribution of culture, in the system. So that you don't just say, well, there were cakes, dates, and but cakes specific for purpose. And then, of course, individual pick-up, which is a classification of individual consumption by purpose, which is what I would like. So the cakes, and then the consumption, for the funeral, the producer, the figure of the funeral, and perhaps there might be an industry whose main purpose is catering for funerals and weddings, which are cultural there. But in the classification, they are manufacturing goods, they are in the classification of the by purpose of production and for purpose of consumption. And then, of course, the classification of the purpose of non-profit institutions, which are lacking in the cultural area. So there are countries which have already developed this separate account, as I said, Chile and Colombia, and of course we are in that space trying to do this. Now, the schematic of what I've talked about, which is non-cultural industries, where you have people who are in non-cultural industries, such as motor manufacturers, but in there, performing cultural occupations, such as the design of this, for it to be quite great and reflect on the emotions of South Africans, and those things that are not made up, they seem to not this way. So, this doesn't exist in motor industry, but there's a responsibility to say that this fits well with South Africa, and that it appeals to their emotions and their life. Now, there are cultural industries, cultural occupations, but there are also cultural industries with non-cultural occupations. Guys are in culture, they play music, they do this, they do that, but they somebody who cleans the floor. Sometimes it is agnostic as to whether the way the floor is cleaned or using Katie and they will sweep the thing. Whichever way the Katie sings his song as he cleans the floor, that has nothing to do with the culture. So these are the kind of things. Now, if we were to look at the cultural environment, types of occupation, cultural, non-cultural, this type of activity, here we will see that the green, the 44, 408, and 197, although that 197 will
although the task is non-cultural, but it is in a cultural industry. And then the Roche pages, although that's a 490, in terms of the type of occupation, it's cultural. In terms of industry, it's non-cultural. Now, all in all, there are 731 people, 731,000 involved in this cultural space, but with ambiguous, so the counting groups can be quite interesting. So this IP industrial practice, international standard industrial classification, which is this IP revision 4, it's the one that we are having to introduce in order to understand this culture. Well, looking at the social dimension, trying to learn something called Tyrus, which says men enjoy their time much more spending on alcohol than most of the child drink, and that's their later than that culture, and they take much more time on that activity than women. So Tyrus study is very important, and here cultural participation, and also we learn in low domestic tourism, and in this domestic tourism, twice the number of women actually probably travel over weekends to go to funeral, less tourists, but for cultural purposes, such as funerals. Now, these are the statistics on in thousands, hundreds of, in thousands, 399,000, which was born, cinema, and so on, and the group for this cultural and non-natural heritage, that's the one. The number of meals on average that people spend with cultural performance and celebration as either 1.1 million and the number of meals that are spent there on average 1.8. And then so the statistics, visual art and life, 103, reading, and of course you can make this down by ratios. Who goes to funerals and spends a lot more time in funerals by age, so on. And then of course here we can look at the domain of here, this travel related to social, cultural, and recreational, 11.2 million South Africans. And there you find in that travel, there'll be a lot of going for funerals and weddings. And travel related to community services and so on and so on. So there are the level of cultural studies that we can produce, as I said, but we haven't as yet gotten this account to the level where Mexico and Colombia are. So it goes on, and the domains such as education, additional study, non-formal education, has 23,000 individuals on average. So what is the impact of creative industries and culture on economic growth and job creation? So we look at the economic statistics here. We look at where the finance, trade, transport, government, manufacturing, personal services, agriculture. And this percentage is that services contribute to the GDP.
Now, in the recreational cultural sector, we did sell a breakdown of that 158,000. In those sectors, libraries, new agencies, radio, sports, heritage. And these are the social numbers of changes in those industries. Cultural and recreational activities, where we just take those and show what their contribution, the same contribution is part and over time. And we can see that the one that the largest share are sports and radio, and then in between we've got two agencies that are running archives. That's for those ones. There are others that we have included here. And so that we should be looking to create this system. So by myself, we are looking at men and women. Here we see that the radio is dominated by men, sports almost similar, women actually are much more there, and then the libraries, the distribution, not this dominated by men, but the distribution of men across this industry versus the distribution of women across this industry in this proportion. Women more in the sporting activities than men, probably because they spend most of the time drinking alcohol. And then this is the breakdown of these people that are engaged in this activities, which is 34, 35, to 64, 48, 50%, that they have. So I think that, Madam Chair, I think that here is just what is possible in terms of the data and how far you can delve into it and dice it, whichever way you want to dice it. So I wouldn't, and then of course, quarter on quarter, for instance, the second quarter of 2015, for the same kind, by province, what that says. And of course, by skill level, training skills, those skills. So we can do this by whatever category. And of course, contribution to GDP, you said 8 billion. So that's all it's for. And then of course it's more likely to be employed, of course, the greater proportion of persons with education level to go to sleep were employed in sports activities, more than half of those who had tertiary education in television. So what are the conclusions? Of course, the conclusion is that we really have to work on this cultural statistics. The first statement I've talked to go in. And then, of course, in doing so, we must domesticate the UNESCO. So, Madam Chair, that's what I thought I should present. And unfortunately, you give me the cost of it.
Thank you very much. I think. Now, as I'm sitting here looking at this presentation and listening to what you're saying, I just wish that there were more people in this room, you know, from different portfolio committees. I think we need to influence the power that be to have a broader meeting for you to present it, because I believe strongly that the information that you're giving us today would make it possible for departments to plan on a particular basis, on basis of the information, because in some instances we just plan for the sake of planning, not having enough information to do the planning. So as I'm looking at this, I believe that this information can actually quite. The portfolio committee would like to urge you to continue this consultation with DCI and the Department of Arts and Culture. Monica, I think you don't wait for him to come to you, go to him. Because I believe that it's important. As the committee, we believe in the first place that people who are involved in creative industries are job creators. They're not job seekers. They create the work and in the process of creating work for themselves, they employ other people. So maybe when you are doing your survey, you may have passed me with my feedback and not asked any questions to me because of one reason or the other. So I think it's important for us as the portfolio committee to get this whole picture, because we believe that, yeah, I can tell you, sometimes it's a by the way thing. When you see it in the State of the Nation address, it's just one line. And you're like, but we believe that it should be at the center, this should be at the center of society. This, I mean, we want all these things that we want, that without people having been grounded on culture, we will fail at the end of the day. So we want, during this 5-year term, 1 year has passed already, 4 years, we are left with 3 and something years now. We would like to urge you to have this study and to complete it, so that when we leave, we are sure that African culture is brought to the space where it belongs. Because as it is now, it's in the periphery, and this is not affecting the society as a whole. So we really want to urge you to do this, and if you want any assistance from the portfolio committee, you are willing. Because as we said earlier, as the portfolio committee, when we came in last year, we said, okay, ours is an oversight mandate, constitutional, we have to oversee. But we are also extending our hand to say we want to support, because we believe that nothing is about us, but everything is about the people that we are serving. If anything that we do is going to assist in the transformation, it's not about us. Let's come together, work together to ensure that whatever we do transforms the lives of all people for the better. Are there any questions or other members on the presentation?
It's difficult to ask questions on issues of the the addresses, it has really been done. But you know, one is an input to say, you know, thank you for the presentation, and it will assist the special on the issue of culture. I never thought one would have addressed that dealing on the issue of the culture, because other people doesn't take culture, they are glad me before I did it. So I went to the report that you gave earlier, you know, to just to go and check. But on the, I think you said the non, like the informal occupation and the formal one. And I like when you put on the informal one, putting the issue of mechanic, the car design. Yes, and I was thinking of a dream. When you say I want this dream of a car, it represents the culture of certain group somewhere. So one never thought that these are the things that you are putting in that. You know, the issue of cakes, indeed, it's a culture. It's a culture, because when you go to the funeral, there's no cases like something that went wrong, you know. And yeah, those are the things that you must check, will get into cakes, especially on the issues of employment. As we know that most of our artists are not on the formal sector. So how the state will put that? And separating it in terms of gender to check which one are more beneficial than other one. As we know that women are more in numbers in the country. But maybe breaking it down to show us on the issue of employment, the market, how, what is happening. And this upcoming one, this suicide, you know, the additional set kids that can stand in the corner, rap and do everything, put it via the YouTube. Did you take that, putting that? These are the things that maybe one will need in future. But thank you so much for that. Maybe you will really take the heritage what the SARA has presented in terms of modernizing in an issue of a business that put it under to check whether we do work or not.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Makonda?
fine.
You are fine. Thank you very much. And also, as I said earlier, that this presentation, I think it's a good start. We are going to the department of us. I was looking at the library, for instance, where you have more men. Yeah? I mean, I don't believe it. Because I think girls like reading more than boys. So I'm challenging that.
The boys, more boys have to go and compete for the girls that they have gone to the library. So they define somebody about them coming to boys. When we girls have gone to the library, there will be some 5 points somebody about them and they are reading.
It's the department that has to look into those issues and try to find out why they are, you know, because as the Honourable Member said earlier, we are in the majority as women in society. So we need to look why. We should be, there should be more women going to the library than men. Educating a woman is educating the whole society. So those are the issues that we will begin to look at with this, in this presentation. But as I said earlier, we will share the information with other portfolio committees as well. But I think what would be good is to have you presenting a number of portfolio committees. For instance, in the issue of we are organizing a meeting. Our management is organizing a meeting between ourselves and the portfolio committee on tourism and environment, and you know. So I think it's important for us to come closer even to Sarah before we go to that meeting, that we plan it together to say how do we align our thinking around this issue. But I think this, do we have copies of this? Oh, okay. Oh, thank you very much. And department, have you received? You'll get one, because I think it's important for you to immediately look into this and see how you as a department can begin to move on the issues that have been raised. I want to thank you very much again for taking, we know you've been out of the country and we were afraid that you won't come back before today, but we are glad that you made it, and we really appreciate the fact that you made this presentation. And we hope that in the 3 and something years that's left, we will work together. Thank you.
Thank you very much, madam. I think there's one thing that I really reciprocated, and that must have been
a role to play in ensuring that, you know, what
our culture is preserved. I would like to thank you, Honorable Members, very much for attending the meeting and for the input. And I would like to encourage the department to read the document and the presentation that was made here, and also to encourage the department and the entities to come closer to each other. You need to work together. And as I said earlier, that the department must have its thumb on the nerve of entities, supporting them, advising them, because at the end of the day, it's not about us really, it's about the people that we are serving. I'd like to thank you very much and encourage you to go out there and do your best. We don't know about tomorrow. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So today is a gift. That's why it's called the present, because it's a gift that you've been given. I thank you very much, and I declare the meeting closed.